This is the Medicast, April 30th, 2007.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to the Medicast, episode 64. I'm Jamie Davis, the Podmedic, and I'd like to welcome you to this podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks for checking out the show. If you're a brand new listener, I want you to stick around, check out several different episodes, and head on over to the website and check out some of the postings over there. Get a sense of what the Medicast community is all about. And for all the rest of you long-term listeners, welcome back to another show. I've got a lot of great information packed in here tonight. I am featuring later on in this podcast an interview with Terry Burgess, who's a physical therapist at Christiana Care Hospital. And she is going to be talking to me about safe lifting techniques and some of the things that her hospital's doing and some things then and products that she found out there that might be available to assist us in the field to help us become safer at lifting and protect ourselves so that we can have a long and productive career without the danger of having a back injury sideline us or retire us early. All that'll be coming up a little later in the show. But first, let's jump into some listener email and get a look at what some of the listeners have been sending in. I got an email from a longtime listener and contributor to the show, Heath. And listener Heath is out there working on his recerting his BLS certification and was taking a class called ACLS for BLS. The class, he said, was just absolutely wonderful. It was a good class that helped him learn a little bit about what he needs to do to get ready to help out a paramedic or other ALS provider and get things ready for him and be available to help out and be an active participant in ALS care. And you know, Heath, I appreciate this link. This is something I really strongly support in my own system. I actively train my EMTs to be thinking ahead on what the paramedic needs. I train them to help out with getting the chest leads set up, help them offer to help the paramedics get IV bags spiked and ready to go. All these things that can be done to help them prepare to help out an ALS provider in the field. Because when it becomes a little hairy, when time's a wasting, that extra pair of hands is really valuable. And if they're knowledgeable hands, that all the much better to provide good care for the patient. So Heath, thanks for that link. I really appreciate it. I got an email from listener Ethan, and Ethan's contributed to the show in the past. He sent me a couple of links for news items, and Ethan, I'm going to look at those and probably include one or both of them in an upcoming episode of the Medicast News, probably this week, so we'll get on those items there. I appreciate you sending me those links. I also got an email from listener Chris, and Chris always sends me some good stuff by email, and this one he sent me was about students being banned from using their iPods in class because they're using them for cheating. And I hope none of you that are students are using the Medicast or anything else with your iPods to cheat on your tests. I certainly want you to use the Medicast to help you prepare for your tests and train and help you stay up on your skills, but we need to stay current on that. I do like the fact that at the end of all of the bad things that are happening with the students and their iPods, they came around and talked a little bit about colleges that are providing iPods to students as a way of enhancing learning, as a way of encouraging professors to provide audio files to podcast some of their lecture material and provide students with a multimedia way to stay current on their skills and their training and their education. And that's one of the reasons I do this show, both for myself and to keep myself current and knowledgeable in what I'm doing, and also to share that knowledge as I find it with you, the listeners. And So I hope you all are using your MP3 players appropriately. And thanks, Chris, for that article. I got another email this evening, right before I started podcasting, from listeners Pam and Andy out in Northern California. And I think Andy or Pam or both of them had taken a 12-lead class. And I had put a post up on the weblog at medicast.com earlier this week about a 12-lead class that I attended and some thoughts on 12-leads. And they responded back to me to say that 12-leads weren't really being widely used in their area. One of their employers uses 12 leads regularly and the other one doesn't. And I just had a few comments and I sent these back to them by email, but I thought it was important to share that information with you guys. The other thing that they sent me was that they had taken a class with Tim Phelan on 12 leads and really became much more confident after taking that class and said that Tim could have had EMTBs reading 12 leads in an hour. 12 leads really aren't, I don't think, that difficult to read once you figure out a few basic things about them. We're really in the field looking almost exclusively for ST elevation in contiguous leads and also for reciprocal elevation in leads from the other side of the heart from what you're looking at. And once you realize that you're looking through the heart and seeing a reverse image of the other side of the heart, and you understand where all the leads are looking in the heart, it's really not that hard to understand what the 12 lead is showing you. But there's a couple of really good classes out there. Tim Phelan's class is excellent. I also highly recommend Bob Page's multi-lead medics class. I've been attending both of them. I've attended both of them in the past, and they both really do a good job. But again, I think that 12 lead is going to be the standard of care here in the next year or two. The new ACLS guidelines, the new American Heart Association recommendations all point at 12 leads as being the standard of care. I know here in the state of Maryland, the state has basically said that all ALS units must be 12 lead capable within the next 13 months by July 1st, 2008. Now, that's not going to be a problem in my area. Pretty much everybody in our county is 12 lead capable and 12 lead trained, but I know that there's some other areas in the state that are still using 3 leads, and that's great for identifying some immediate problems and lethal rhythms, but it doesn't really help you in identifying easily things like ST elevation MI. So thank you, Pam and Andy, for that comment and sending me that. I really appreciate you taking the time to listen to the show and to send me that information. Thank you. And lastly, another email I got from a listener and fellow podcaster, and I'm going to segue this into this week's link of the week. Our good friend Rick Rosati over at the Mitigation Journal podcast just told me that he got a promotion. He is now a battalion chief in his job and will be handling the training there in his community. And I just wanted to congratulate Rick again on this publicly in this forum here on the MedicCast. I want to just say congratulations to Chief Rick Rosati over at the Mitigation Journal podcast. If you haven't checked out his podcast, I highly recommend it to you. Head on over to his podcast, mitigationjournal.libsyn.com. That's LIBSYN.com. And you can also find a link to that in my show notes and on the blog there on the left-hand side for all of the blog links. But Rick's Mitigation Journal podcast really looks at EMS and fire and disaster preparedness and really looks at a broad spectrum of all hazards approach, as he calls it. And I think that that's a good way to put that, Rick, the all hazards approach to dealing with any kind of an emergency. And I urge you to head on over and check that out. He had some great comments last week about the Virginia Tech murders and exactly what may or may not have been able to have been done from an all hazards approach to that situation. So you might want to check that out over at Rick's podcast. And congratulations again, Rick. Well, without further ado, let's jump right on into this week's news. This week in the news, I want to lead off with a great article I found. This is from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and it has to do with a group of EMT students who were attending class at a hospital, and they were leaving class and walking into the parking lot, and they happened upon a woman who had gotten to the parking lot but was unable to make it to the emergency room and was having her baby in the minivan while her husband frantically searched for help. They spoke very little English, but the students were able to figure out what was going on and immediately began using their training. As Brandon Bergner, one of the EMT students, said, the training just kicks in. It was a great experience. There's just nothing like real-life hands-on experience. This is awesome. The students had been inside the Wheaton Franciscan Healthcare Medical Center just a few minutes before, and they were there together. Along with Bergner were students Joe Givner and Mark Hullhouse. All three of them worked together to help deliver the baby right there in the back of the minivan. They assessed the child, assessed the mother, and got them both safely into the emergency room nearby. This is just another instance of the training coming in handy. And I can't tell you how many times when I've been in a class that I've had a call come up very soon afterward that had to do with something I learned in that class. So, you know, keep your eyes open, keep your heads up and looking around, and make sure you're taking your training seriously, because you never know how quickly you might have to put that training to work. And kudos to these heads up EMT students. It seems like from everything I've read in this article, guys, that the three of you, if you're listening, are going to do just fine as EMTs. If you are anything like me, you're constantly looking on the internet and other resources to try to find ways to get new information and get knowledge and refresh knowledge about certain treatments, about diseases, about medications. It's probably one of the reasons you're listening to this show. Came across an article over at WebMD.com, which has quite a few in-depth articles on many different diseases, medications, and different things. And I found an article on living with COPD. It talks about what COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is. It talks about how, even though it is the fourth leading cause of death in the United States and worldwide, it is one of the lesser known diseases to the public. And the reason for this is it's probably because people don't realize how the disease that comes from smoking and other exposures to pollutants will evolve into COPD. The public just isn't aware of that. So check out the article over there. There's a link in the show notes. And it just talks a little bit about COPD, what it is, how people can contract it, the different types that may be found. There are also more articles in that series that deal with living with COPD, the benefits of exercise and diet. And I know we don't really go into a lot of depth with our patients on a lot of their treatments and things, but we can be advocates for them to make some just suggestions on things like easy ways they can increase their exercise levels or better ways that they can find out more information about their COPD. You can point them to places like WebMD.com. So just kind of as a heads up, take a look at this article and the associated links for this particular page, and you will, I think, be very pleased with the amount of information you find there. Moving right along, does it surprise any of you that more and more prescriptions are being dispensed every day? I guess not, because we all seem to be copying down longer and longer lists of patient meds as we take our sample history and everything. But I begin to wonder if this type of overload of medications causes problems. And then I turn around and I find an article and a research study that says that that just might be the case. We see patients with so many medications and so many possible interactions between those medications in the field. And we wonder if the doctors are aware of how many things people are taking. And a lot of doctors rely on patients' pharmacists to help out as members of the healthcare team. But a study that came recently out of the University of Arizona College of Pharmacy says that that's not necessarily the case, that the increased number of prescriptions being dispensed is really overloading the pharmacist's ability to stay up on which ones are potentially going to provide a negative or hazardous interaction with other medications that the patient is taking. The study found that between January to March 2003, about 1,375 prescriptions were dispensed each week. During that time, the average number of drug-drug harmful interactions by each pharmacy was about 32.1. Now, when you look at this, actually, if you added one more prescription each hour to the pharmacist's workload of about 14.1 prescriptions, you increase the danger for drug interactions by about 3%. The study also found, and this is curious because I know my pharmacy really touts their computerized system and how it will pick up on drug interactions, but the study found that all of the automation techniques that were being put in place to help pharmacists become more efficient and be able to supposedly act in a safer manner actually weren't doing all that they needed to do, that it was the overload of prescriptions being filled that that caused the pharmacist to miss drug interactions. So this is something we need to be aware of. We need to make sure that we're checking the meds that patients are taking, and we provide that list to the hospital and maybe speak a few concerns to the nurse when we hand over care that, you know, this patient really has no idea why they're taking these pills, and yet they're taking them every single day. Maybe the nurse and the doctor can review the medications and possibly help the patient get away from a hazardous drug interaction. Finally, as someone who blogs quite frequently about EMS issues and things, I found an article here that was a little disturbing and a little concerning to me. And it's something that all of us that strive to share some of our experiences and some of our thoughts online, it's something for all of us just to keep in mind and reminds us to be very careful about putting any access to identifiable patient information online or any place where someone could get it. That is a HIPAA violation, and you really need to be careful. When you're talking about specific calls, you need to really dumb down some of the information so that none of it can really be tied back to anyone who might be paying attention to what you're doing. And so this comes from a Portland rape case, where in Portland, Oregon, a rape victim was involved in a rape and was attacked. A paramedic crew was sent to help out the victim, take her to the hospital, get that process moved along. And then apparently the paramedic on the unit went and posted some details on his MySpace blog. And it seems like he was trying to just kind of vent and talk a little bit about his thoughts about the call and what he thought people should try to do to stay away from rapists. And it wasn't making the victim at fault or anything like that, but there was enough information in the post that was enabled news agencies to find the patient and track her down and come knocking on her door. And so she's claiming both actual monetary damages and other damages as a result of this. And it just reminds me that we all need to be careful. I'm not going to stop sharing information about things that I feel strongly about, but I am going to be really careful about sharing information that could be used to identify any patient that I might be talking about. Remember again the HIPAA rules on privacy. You are not to do anything to disclose identifiable patient information or patient identifiers, things like address, name, social security number, age, anything that could tie back directly to the patient. You can do this for training purposes if you need to, although I wouldn't see any reason to actually identify the patient in training. You can black out the name. You can talk about calls hypothetically. You can do a lot of things to obscure the identifiers of the patient and still share the knowledge that you gleaned from that particular call. So I hope that this gets resolved in such a fashion that the paramedic involved can go on and continue their career. But it's something, at least a word of caution for the rest of us. Well, it's time for this week's tip and trick of the week. And this week, I'm going to be putting up, as I said earlier, the interview I did with Terry Burgess a few weeks back. And Terry really was happy to talk with me and shared some good information, some surprises that she found when researching injuries in EMS related to lifting, and really was very helpful in providing some information and sharing her time with me. She's with Christiana Care Health Systems in Delaware. The hospital is very proactive in dealing with lifting strain on healthcare workers. They've actually installed lifts in the ambulance bay that can be tracked over to the patient and assist with lifting the patient directly off the stretcher at the ambulance and onto a gurney and into the hospital. All of these things are in place to assist the EMS providers that show up at that hospital. And so I applaud them for their proactiveness on this particular topic. And there's going to be some information talked about in this interview. I will have links to a lot of the products that Terry mentions and some general links that she provided me regarding lifting in EMS and injuries in EMS. And I hope to have Terry back on in the future where maybe we can talk about some changes that have come along. I think this is a really important topic area. And to tell you how important I think it is, this is one of the primary causes of lost wages and lost time and lost productivity in our industry. And the fact that the managers in our field and the fire departments that we work for, if we work for a fire department, are completely lackadaisical in their response to dealing with this issue is just shocking to me. And I'll give you a story. I talked to one of the product representatives from one of the products that Terry mentions, the Mangar Elk. It's a series of airbags that actually will lift a patient off a floor. You can roll the polyvinyl airbags. They're pretty flat. You roll them under the patient, roll the patient to one side, put them under, roll them back, flatten them out. Use the airbags to actually lift the patient up to the height of the stretcher and then just slide them over to it. No lifting required at all. And so this type of a product really would be perfect. It's small enough to fit in a duffel bag. You unroll it at the scene. There's two different sizes. There's one that's the full length of the body. There's another one that you can sit a patient on and then raise them up to a sitting position and then move them over to the stretcher that way. These products just are no-brainers for a lot of situations that we run into. And yet this product representative told me on the phone that when he was at the EMS Expo last year in Las Vegas, and I will not name the department, although he did, a fire chief from a major metropolitan department was walking by his booth and stopped because he was curious about what they were showing him. And when the guy explained to him that this was for patient lifting to assist to avoid EMS injuries in the field, and this is not a lie, the chief apparently told him, "We don't need that. That's what rookies are for." So if this gives you any indication of how valuable your backs are and your long-term service is to some of the agencies you work for, this needs to be changed. We are shorthanded as it is, and anything we can do, anything our managers can do, anything our trainers can do to help teach us to lift safely, to help teach us how to use different aids to lifting and transfer of patients safely, and any products that they can provide us with to enable us to have longer, more productive careers in the field, benefits all of us. It benefits us, the employees and volunteers, and it benefits also the businesses for all of the billions of dollars of lost wages in this country related to back injuries. All right, enough of that on Jamie on the soapbox on this issue. Let's jump right on in to the great interview I had with Terry Burgess. Hi, this is Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'm here with Terry Burgess, who is a physical therapist at Christiana Care Facility or Christiana Hospital in Delaware. Terry, thank you for joining me here on the show.
You're welcome.
Can you tell me a little bit about your background?
I've been a physical therapist for 26 years. I graduated from Stony Brook in Long Island, the State University of New York. And I've been working at Christiana for about a year and a half because I liked the teaching element here, and I'm very into injury prevention. I do all the lectures to all the nursing schools that send nurses here for their affiliations, and I do all the education for the new employees here in teaching them how to use our equipment to keep them safe.
Excellent. Well, we all know that back injury and lifting injuries and repetitive stress type injuries are common in the healthcare field, but how common exactly are they? Do you have any statistics on the prevalence of these kind of injuries?
Well, in our classes, we do talk about, OSHA comes out with a list every year of who is injured in the United States as far as U.S. workers, and people in the healthcare profession have been listed as second only to truck drivers for probably at least the last 10 years. We're hoping to change that by using equipment and minimalizing the manual patient handling. We have a lot of statistics, actually, about back pain in general. I mean, it's the most common cause of disability for workers under 45. They lose 93 million work days each year in the United States, and it's estimated that it costs the U.S. $30 to $50 billion a year just in musculoskeletal injuries. And, of course, you know, EMS providers are really at a high risk for musculoskeletal injuries because of, you know, what you have to do every day.
That's very true, and it's amazing, you know, when you look at the statistics like that, why more employers aren't spending more money on alleviating that problem, because you would think that it would pay back every year. Do you see that in the facility you work in, that there's a payback?
It is totally true, and that's you know, it's surprising to me too, because Christiana will tell you in 1 year alone they saved $700,000 not paying out to lost time injury when compared to the year before when they instituted the ceiling mounted lifts and more equipment and training with the equipment in the hospital. It's a win-win situation, really, to put the money into equipment and into training in posture and body mechanics and having your employees not be injured. You don't lose valuable employees that you've spent a lot of money training, and it's better for the patients, of course, all around to have well-trained personnel taking care of them. And like I said, they saved a lot of money because you're paying out the lost time injury, you know, when your employees are getting injured like this.
That's so true, and I see so many people that get injured that way. In fact, in my nursing class, which is where I met you, you actually came and talked to our nursing student class. One of the providers there is a retired flight paramedic who injured his back because of having to lift a patient into the helicopter, and the person on the other side let go before he was ready to, and he had to take the full weight.
Unfortunately, that's probably way too common. I did do a little research myself, knowing I was going to talk to you, and looked for studies specifically for EMS personnel, and there are not a lot of studies that just focus on your area, but I did get, there was a survey done in 2005 by NAEMT, okay. And it said that 47% of the people who responded to the survey did report a back injury while they were performing their duties. That is huge. I mean, that's half of the people working, you know, in the ambulance are saying that they're getting back injuries. And also, I did found another study from the Association of Firefighters. Their annual death and injury survey says that 50% of all the injuries are sprains and strains that people have at work. And it's also 50% of all the retirements by injury are from sprains and strains of the back. So that's a pretty big number of people getting hurt in your line of work.
It's really a shame. And it's one of those holes in the field, partly because I think it really doesn't fall squarely into the healthcare industry. And because it's an emergency services industry, there's a lot of things that I think a lot of managers say, well, we don't have to comply with this particular OSHA characteristic because we're emergency providers. How can you provide for OSHA safe lifting when you're bent over in a ditch and it's the only way you can get the person out?
Yeah, there is instances that, you know, there's probably nothing you can do. I mean, if you're talking about life or death, you have to put yourself in these awkward postures and do these lifts that you would never do otherwise. But I think that sometimes, you know, my husband's an emergency medical doctor too, and he tells me all what goes on in the hospital. And sometimes things aren't emergency situations, and yet people still use poor posture. If you're not in a, you know, a life or death, have to move that person right now, then you can really take the time to use good posture, use good body mechanics, and hopefully, if on your ambulance you have some of the, you know, equipment, you know, that is made for the field, then you would take the time to use it. But I can definitely see what you're saying. I mean, if you have to move somebody really fast, sometimes you have no choice. And another problem is that there's not enough people around sometimes probably to help you. You have to move somebody in a poor way sometimes. Having more bodies will save you that, you know, that injury. But I realize that, you know, maybe you only have three people on an ambulance sometimes, so you don't have the bodies either to help you with a lift that you have to do.
That's true. And in fact, for a lot of paid services, there's only two people on the ambulance.
When
you talk about lifting a person, it's 300 or 400 pounds.
Exactly.
And that happens all the time. It really is.
I know. Our obesity rate in the United States has increased so dramatically. I mean, I have a 2004 study in front of me. 32% of adults are obese. Are considered obese. And, you know, and so I know that out there you're facing people that are over 300 pounds quite a bit. And at Christiana, we have a 50-pound rule. Each person isn't supposed to lift more than 50 pounds. So, you know, for a 300-pound person, if you had to do a deadlift on them, you're supposed to have six people for that. And I'm sure that you don't have six people to do a lift like that.
No, we don't. And, you know, we probably could call for additional resources. If you're an EMS service, you can call for local fire engine to respond to bring you some additional personnel. But I think people get lazy, and there's a push to get the job done faster. And you're right, it's not always that true emergency. That really only happens about 1% of the time. So why don't we take the time to call in additional help, wait an additional 10 minutes, and get the extra people there?
It is true. I mean, you have to give the EMS personnel a lot of credit for wanting to get back out on their rigs. You know, when they come in the ED, they want to get them off their stretchers really fast and get back out there so they can help someone else. And, you know, and that's great. But sometimes I've noticed that maybe they could use a slide board. Maybe they could take the time to use something else. Other than, you know, manually take two people and lift that person and put it on, you know, into the hospital bed. You know, and we're at fault too, because, you know, we should insist, hey, let's use something to move that patient rather than do a manual transfer like that, you know, if there's not an emergency involved. I'll tell you something that's, you know, pretty new here at our hospital, we're working on it right now, is we're going to give slings to all the ambulances, slings that go to our ceiling-mounted lift. We have two double lifts in the ED that lift up to 1,000 pounds, and one is in the ambulance bay. But it's not doing any good if the patients who are, you know, bariatric patients over 300 pounds aren't coming on the slings. Because we found that when they come on your stretchers from the ambulance, and if it's not a bariatric, you know, a 6-inch large or wide stretcher, it's hard to get a sling under an obese person because they could tilt over on those stretchers.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's no room to roll a patient on those stretchers.
No, you can't roll them. So we're going to be giving the slings to all the ambulances so that when they know they have a patient, they'll put it on the stretcher first before the patient gets on the stretcher. So when they bring them into the ED, we'll just hook them right up and be able to, you know, transfer them very quickly without any problems. That's something we're working on right now. We realized that was lacking, that there should be slings out there in the field so that they can be right underneath the patient when they're put on the ambulance.
That's excellent news. And just to explain to my listeners, and I'll have some links in my show notes so that they can go and look at some of the websites with some of this technology. But what exactly are you talking about when you talk about the sling and the lift? What does that mean?
Okay, it's a ceiling-mounted lift. They are electronically, you know, press a button and it'll pick the patient up. As soon as you hook the sling to a hanger bar, it's sitting on the ceiling, the lift, and it'll lift that patient right up off the stretcher. When I say we have a double one, the single ceiling mounted lifts only go up to 550-pound capacity, but in RED, we put two double ones, so they each have a 1,000-pound capacity, and in our ambulance bay, there's one with a 1,000-pound capacity also. It's a very simple device, and we're putting them in every single hospital room at Christiana Health Services. That's Wilmington, Riverside, and Christiana. Every hospital room will have a ceiling-mounted lift to move patients. So the ED should have that too. So that's where we're working right now.
And then it rolls on a track system so that it can actually be moved to any point in the room. And I'm doing my nursing clinicals now up on, I guess we're on 4C. We just moved over there. And I'm amazed. I mean, the thing's really, you told us you just push it with a couple of fingers. Really can. It rolls that
very
easily.
Very low friction. It's very simple. You know, you just move that patient lightly with your hand and you're transferring right from the stretcher to a bed or anywhere else in the room.
So I guess for those of us, and I have listeners all over the United States, Canada, and the rest of the world, but really it behooves them to get in contact with their local facility and find out what kind of lifting assistance that facility has available for heavier patients.
Right, because it should be available to them also as they're transferring a patient into the, you know, their emergency department there.
Okay, so let's go back to where we have the patient in the field. Let's just talk a little bit about just general proper positioning, posture, and the stance to use when lifting. If we can describe that a little bit, because while we get a little bit of it in our EMT training, it really is like a couple of paragraphs in a chapter. And you know how quick that goes by in any kind of educational setting.
Posture and body mechanics are very important. And I mean, we talk a lot about equipment, but this is the first thing that you should do is just use your body correctly in lifting. And what you want to do is use the large muscles of your legs to lift. So the most important thing you know, I can get across is that your back isn't made for lifting. You don't bend over at the waist and lift up anything on the floor. I don't even lift up a pencil that way. It's squatting that you should do. Use your knees, use your quadriceps, the large muscles of your thighs, to do any kind of lift. But beyond that, you know, if you go into even more technique, you want to keep position your feet apart. They should be shoulder width apart, your feet, when you're doing a lift. You want to avoid all twisting. Very bad for your back to do twisting with a lift. You want to maintain the normal curve of your back, so you're not going to be bent over. You're going to keep your back upright. Other things you might not think of is you want to use a grip that's a palm up grip, because that is the most efficient position for your biceps to work, and your biceps use your big elbow flexor, so you want the palm up grip when you're lifting something. You want to have enough people to do the lift. Like I said, we have a 50-pound rule here. We'd like it to be, you know, zero lift here, but we're not there yet. But if you kind of go by a 50-pound rule, you got a 200-pound patient, you want to have four people there, and you want to evenly distribute the people. And probably the last thing, and people don't always think about, is the communication. There has to be someone who's leading the lift, and there has to be a count for the lift, so everyone's lifting simultaneously. And I found in my classes, it's a small point, but you know, some people like to do a 1, 2, 3 and lift. You have to make sure that the person that you're lifting with is going to lift on 3, or they're not a 1, 2, 3 go person. We've had that in the hospital here, and people have actually been hurt that way because they think they're lifting at the same time and they're not, and they pick up a heavy weight by themselves, which can really jar your back.
I had that happen during a cardiac arrest with a very heavy patient, and we were transporting out to the ambulance, and I was going on 3, and somebody else was on 1, 2, 3 and lift. And so I was at the foot of the stretcher, and I just started to go up, and it was – and of course, now here's a patient that was probably pushing 300 pounds, and it was only two of us. There were other people there, but we just had one at the head and one at the foot like we always do because we're just used to doing it that way.
Yeah.
So that's an example.
Right.
Well, I ended up going home, taking ibuprofen, and being a little sore for the next couple of days. So.
Right.
But
it does happen.
It does happen. So it's important to communicate where we're going on 3, not after 3.
On 3. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you said something about Christiana striving towards being a zero lift facility. And I think people would probably guess what that means. But what does that mean as far as the technology you're instituting and the products that you found? Because a lot of these products are not from here in the United States. This initiative really has come from other places in the world. Is that correct?
That's true. Europe is 10 years ahead of us in all this lifting equipment. They have facilities there, specifically in Norway. Some of our therapists traveled over to Norway where there is near zero lift in their facilities. I don't know if there will ever be a place that's exactly zero lift, but you strive toward that there's very diminished manual patient handling. Any amount of actual lifting is causing, you know, injury to your back, and your back's just not meant for that kind of lifting at all. So the less you do, the better for you. Our hospital is getting closer and closer to zero lift because of the ceiling-mounted lifts that I described earlier. I mean, those lifts can transfer a patient from bed to stretcher, transfer a patient to a chair. They can turn a patient. They can reposition the patient, meaning move them up in bed without you doing anything manually, just hooking the sling up and, you know, using the push-button device to lift the patient up. So that's where we're headed, is toward zero lift. There'll still be reasons to manually reposition patients, you know, in their wheelchairs, et cetera. But that's kind of what we strive toward is the less lifting, the less injuries we're going to have. So that's where we want to go.
So when we're talking about working in EMS field, zero lift, we've already decided, is really something that we just can't do in the field. But there are devices out there that are portable that could be useful to us. And you talked about a slide board. It's something I've seen in hospitals and in x-ray facilities. But, you know, it's something that I don't think a lot of ambulance services have, despite the fact that they don't require a whole lot of space.
Yeah, a slide board is probably like the size of your full backboard, do you think?
Yeah, but the length of it, but thinner, much thinner.
Thinner and very low friction. So you just put it underneath the patient like it's a bridge between the patient's bed and the stretcher, and then you use a sheet and you slide the patient over. Rather than do a lift, you're just sliding the patient. There's also things called slide sheets, which are even less expensive and more portable, that you can use, that you put, and the patient, it's specially made material that the patient slides on very easily. Again, you know, anytime you can slide or roll a patient rather than lift a patient, you're doing your back a whole lot of good. Other things that not as inexpensive, but still you know, can be used out in the field. With Alico makes a lift, a portable lift that can lift a patient up to 308 pounds. I'm just looking at the list right here. But the interesting about the lift, it's called the Alico Light, and it can be disassembled into 3 pieces, put together very easily, and it folds into a bag. It folds into a bag that the ambulance personnel can carry with them. So that's one lift that I just learned about that can actually be transported into a person's house and used that way. But there's also a great thing called a hover jack, which can get a patient off the floor in, you know, just a couple of minutes. It's a pneumatic device. You just put it under the patient like a sheet, and it's attached to a blower, and it just lifts the patient up. Like there's mattresses underneath the patient till they're up to a height of a stretcher, and then you just transfer them over with a hover mat over to the stretcher. And we're just getting them into RED right now for patients who fall on the floor in RED. We'll be getting them off the floor with a hover jack. And that's something that can be carried with you. But also, that's not small enough like to fit between a toilet and a bathtub. So I was trying to think about things like that, because you did mention to me how many people, you know, you have to get out of a bathroom.
There is something called
an ELK. It's small. It's a small pneumatic device that also blows up and can lift a patient up. It doesn't take much room at all. It's made by Mangar. They have the ELK and the CAMEL. And they also, you know, they like blow up underneath the patient to lift them up. As long as you can get it underneath the patient's buttocks, it gets them that much off the ground, so you're not doing a deadlift off the ground. So those are two more pneumatic devices that can be, you know, transported easily on an ambulance. So there are some things out there to do lifts, to help with lifts. It's just, you know, a matter of purchasing them, learning how to use them, carrying them with you, getting used to, you know, doing it that way. You know, and only once you learn how to use these things, they only take a couple more minutes than, you know, actually, you know, grabbing somebody and lifting that person off the ground. They really don't take a whole lot of time to use.
Well, and I have the links to some of these things in the show notes, so we'll definitely include that. I like the hover jack, and for those of us that are in dual services, these are very similar to the airbags we use to stabilize motor vehicles that are on their side. We blow up the airbags, and they fill the voids around the car to keep it from continuing to roll over if it's on its side or on its roof.
Oh, okay.
So this is something we would be very familiar with, and there would certainly be no reason. Looks like it comes with a little canister, like vacuum cleaner canister.
Yes.
And you plug it into the wall and it blows up.
Yep. You just put the tube right into, it blows up by cells, which would like be thin matches. You blow one up, then you blow the next, then you blow the next. And it's four levels, and it eventually gets that patient right up off the ground.
That's excellent. So that's something that I think might be a very interesting thing. And then you said the hover mat, which is actually like a air hockey table type device that slides the patient across onto the next surface.
Yeah, that's for lateral transfers. And you just, you know, it's the air that's decreasing the friction. You blow that up underneath the patient and transfer them from one surface to another, and, you know, in a laying down position, the hover mat does. We use them here a lot in the hospital, and they would be very portable also.
Well, Teresa, I thank you very much for sharing with me and with the other listeners some of your thoughts on lifting safety. And it's something, based upon what you found, I mean, a 50% injury rate is huge in any industry. And anything we can do to lessen that and impress upon the leaders in our departments that this is something that could save lost time and there's real dollars at stake here is certainly
very
a help.
True.
So I thank you very much, and I might call you back and have you back on in the future as we look at maybe instituting some of these things. We can come back and talk with you about what we found.
All right. It was nice talking to you.
Great, Terry. Thank you very much.
I want to thank Terry again for consenting to be on the show and interviewed. I don't think she really knew what a podcast was before I'd contacted her and put her in touch with me and asked her to do the interview. And but she came on the show and she really came up with a lot of great information for me. I also want to thank her supervisors and everybody over at Christiana Care Health Systems. Christiana is the place I'm doing my current clinicals with my nursing program, and they really have been very welcoming for all of the nursing students from all of the facilities around. And I just want to thank them for that. They're a great facility. They seem to be really devoted to education, both inside their facility and also to the surrounding EMS facilities. They definitely, involving lifting assistance at least, like I said, are proactive in helping out the EMS community there as well. So they are certainly a top-class hospital and a credit to their chosen field. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show. Make sure you get back in touch with me and contact me if you want to. I would love to hear your comments, your questions, your corrections on anything you've heard in this show or any other recent episode. You can reach me at email address podmedic@mac.com. You can also catch up with me on the Medicast voicemail line at 941-306-3342. That's 941-30-MEDIC. And finally, you can leave comments directly on the Medicast blog over at www.medicast.com. And over at the Medicast blog, on any of the blog posts there, you can find the show notes. You can also find all of the other things that I put up midweek as I come across other articles or have other comments and ideas that I'd like to share with you. You can leave comments just by clicking the comments button and doing a quick job of registering for the site. Doesn't take but a second. I approve your comments very quickly because I check on them quite frequently, and your comments will be up there to be shared with the other Medicast listeners. Once you have one comment approved, you can go ahead and leave as many comments as you want. I just need to make sure you're not spamming the site. So that's why there's a process for registration there. If you'd also like to get information sent directly to you by email, I strongly recommend you sign up for the Medicast newsletter. The Medicast newsletter is absolutely free. You'll get a copy of the show notes with all the links sent directly to you every week when I produce the Medicast. You'll also get a separate Medicast newsletter subscriber only link of the week with some training tips and things like that at the end. All of that on the Medicast newsletter, and you can sign up for free over at the Medicast site. Go to medicast.com/blog, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a link for the Medicast newsletter. Sign up now, and you'll get the show notes and a lot of other great information sent to you directly. That is just for my use only. I don't share those with anybody else. I don't spam you. You're just going to get stuff from me, and that's it. And without further ado, I'm going to wrap up the show, as I always do, with some excellent PodSafe music. This week, I have a repeat performer, a performer by the name of Brett Michaels. Had him on the show before, played another one of his songs, but I found this one. It's called Let It Go, and I think it's an appropriate song for us. We need to let it go sometimes. We need to kind of just not bring stuff home with us and impact our families with some of our problems and issues we run into at work. They don't always understand. We know that. But make sure you're utilizing the resources that your workplace provides or your volunteer community provides so that you can go home and be safe with your family without bringing home a lot of junk from what you've seen on the street with you. So without further ado, I'm going to leave you here with Brett Michaels' great song, Let It Go. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. Until next time, scene safety, BSI.
I just let go inside, the first time in a very long time. Now I pray for no consequence, but I won't hide this time, no. 'Cause life begins right here, the place I've always feared. Right.